It's so fucking good. It's so exciting. It is such an important movie. Like, 90s movies are this movie.
Yep. Yeah,
from then on out.
1994. I mean, it was one of the banner years for cinema, yes, for American cinema. Oh, yeah. It was a big boy for us, and this movie is definitely part of it. This movie, I was saying before we went on the air to you, Steve, like, this was a movie I knew about stuff in it before I'd actually seen it. Looney Tunes was parodying it. Like, it permeated pop culture in a way. Movies that have shit like this in it rarely do.
Yeah.
Am I the only in theaters?
Yes.
And I saw it at 11 years old.
Wow, that's awesome.
Opening weekend.
I did not see it in full. What happened was...
Uh-oh.
Here we go.
Chris's dad got kicked out of the theater for some reason.
No, what happened, I was seeing a different movie. I forget what it was. Maybe it was Black Sheep?
Uh-huh.
It was some other movie I had been sent to so that my parents could see...
Pulp Fiction. Got it.
I don't know if Black Sheep was farting around in 1994.
I would not want to hear what Quentin Tarantino would call that.
he's got a couple words.
It's all right if I call it, man. I hang out with a lot of Black Sheep anyway.
I hang out with Chris Farley, man.
Yeah, I call it Chris Farley's best movie, all right? Okay.
So that whatever I was in ended way early. They must have done the time wrong. And I went to Pulp Fiction back in the day when they weren't
sneaking in.
Yeah, I was sneaking in, and sneaking in was much easier before 98, I think, is when they started.
Chris Cabot.
And I come in, of course, at the literally right when they're like, "Where's the heart? Where's the heart?"
Oh, yes.
And I watched them do the...
Oh, really?
Adrenaline shot. And I'm like, holy shit.
And you ran out of the theater?
And I'm like, okay, I'm going to stay here for a little bit.
Did you watch the rest of the movie?
I got through up until essentially when Butch leaves to get his watch.
Yeah.
Okay.
I definitely rented this contemporaneously when it came out, so I was probably 11 or 12. Like, you know what I mean? And then I saw Reservoir Dogs after that. Like, it was like... Yeah. Oh, that's Pulp Fiction, and then I watched Reservoir Dogs.
Yes, yeah. I saw this first.
Yeah,
I saw them in the same order. But for me, it was definitely still VHS, but yes, like DVD was around. Like, I'm pretty sure I didn't see this movie until I was like in early high school.
You probably got more out of it than I did at like 12 years old. Yeah, you know totally what I mean?
But I do remember, though, because again, that like permeating the pop culture, so much so that it was a movie my parents were aware of, and it was the very rare, but it happened, the "you're not going to see Pulp Fiction."
Oh, okay.
Because we heard it's fucking nasty.
My parents wore out the soundtrack CD. Like,
it's a great soundtrack.
Too, it was on all the time in my house. And it's a great, it's undefeated soundtrack. Really. Yes.
Yeah. I listened to it this week. I had a great time. We need to tell you what Pulp Fiction means.
Exactly.
I wonder if this is like and also the demon Harvey Weinstein looms large over this film as well. I wonder if that's a Harvey note, like, no one's going to understand what your title is to have a definition.
Oh, that could be, but that bitch can't read either.
One, a soft, moist, shapeless mass of matter. Two, a magazine or book containing lurid subject matter and being characteristically printed on rough, unfinished paper.
Nothing in there, though, about consistently using the N-word.
No, that's a subtext. It says lurid.
Sure.
Does anyone remember the advertisement for the Seinfeld episode when George gets citrus in his eye and it's like, "You've seen Pulp Fiction. Now it's pulp whatever."
Oh,
and it's like,
no way.
And they played the music. Someone can find it somewhere.
Oh, really?
And it's like, "Pulp can move, baby." And I'm like, what in the world?
That's
and
it was insane.
It was a little too late in the day to be doing that. You know what I mean? Like,
well,
it was probably 96 maybe.
The pulp is kind of later on-ish. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So that I remember very clearly.
That's disgusting.
Well, you see, Jerry, it's legal to buy it. It's legal to sell it if you're proprietor of a hash bar. It's legal to own it.
I didn't know I didn't go to Burger King.
It's a metric system, Jerry.
Yeah, metric system.
A cop over there does not have the right to search you, Jerry.
That's it. I'm going. I'm fucking going.
Well, you dig it most of all.
Look at the big brains on Brad.
Wait, which one is that? The one with all the shit in your face? So here I am. I'm getting heroin from my dealer, George. And I thought that the woman with all the piercings, and now I think my dealer has a problem with me. I made fun of his wife by accident.
Insulted your drug dealer's wife?
I didn't mean to. I thought she was the friend.
So here's what you do. You get piercings in your face, and you go back like nothing ever happened.
You tell her you were just joking?
They keyed my Malibu.
Yeah, dance contest. Oh, that would be interesting to watch. No, I don't remember that advertisement, as a matter of fact, but that's fucking great.
The fucking Bugs Bunny and Daffy as Jules and fucking Vincent makes more sense than that shit.
Space Jam,
It's Space Jam. It's Elmer Fudd and Yosemite Sam.
Yes.
They do Jules
gun
and Vincent.
Gun guys.
And they have guns for a second. And then, of course, they're
big heroin guys.
Yes.
But to what Chris is saying, though, I'm fairly certain.
Oh, I'm sure there's
been Boardwalk t-shirts.
Oh, yes.
Where it's Bugs and Daffy dressed up like Jules and Vincent.
The old fucking Warner Brothers store around where fucking Juilliard is, I'm sure they had that shit all over the fucking place.
This song was so iconic.
Dick Dale.
Yeah, it became so synonymous with the movie in a way that few songs do. Like, you want to say Pulp Fiction, you just play that song. Like, it's the Pulp Fiction song. You know what I mean? Like,
just insane levels of zeitgeist permeation with this movie.
Well, because this opening scene is incredible, by the way.
He loves writing people talking in diners.
Mm-hmm. What I think he gives you is the timelessness of it. Like, there's 70s stuff in this, but it's also clearly the 90s at points. Like, you can't really place it anywhere. Like, the fact that filterless red apples, $1.90, what are you even talking about?
I don't even know. Can you get filterless cigarettes at this point?
That's a great question. You got to go buy them down in hell, I think.
I remember back when we were in college, you could at least find them. There were still like Lucky Strike unfilters, I think our buddy Jack used to buy once in a while.
We had a poker buddy of ours was big on the unfiltered cigs back in the day.
Marb Red unfilters were around for a longer time than a lot of stuff.
Fastest way to the grave, those guys.
If you're looking for a way out.
We are at the diner. This is Pumpkin, Tim Roth, and Honey Bunny, Amanda Plummer.
And he really does set out his idea. Like, Tarantino is setting out his whole plan here. Like, you know, everybody goes and they go to gas stations and banks and all this for crime. Why not go to a restaurant? What's more interesting? Using a gun, putting it in someone's face, or on a phone?
Yeah.
Talking.
Yeah.
He's talking. Crime is about talking.
Yeah.
Like that to me was like, oh, he's just saying it right here. This is his whole plan.
Right, yeah, because someone held up a bank with a phone call.
And it works just as well as a gun.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's great to watch Tim Roth in his natural accent. You know what I mean? Just do it. And he's just this British guy.
Yep.
And we say this all the time. It wouldn't make sense in Reservoir Dogs. He has to be a cop. It wouldn't make sense him being a cop. Spoiler alert, he's a cop in that movie.
Hmm.
Here it's just like, let's just have him be British. And he's unfettered.
There's
here.
One less thing on Tim Roth, the performer's brain.
Yes.
When he's already trying to recite dense Quentin Tarantino dialogue here too. So just talk as you are. Don't worry about it because it's irrelevant to the character. It's actually kind of more fascinating.
Yes.
How did Amanda Plummer meet up with this dude? What is that? And it allows your brain to kind of think about potentialities.
Well,
that's cool.
Coming to Netflix next summer is Honey Bunny, the origin story.
How they got to that diner and all the fun steps along the way.
Come on now.
Is Roger Avery going to AI that whole thing? That'll be fun.
Put him back in prison. That guy.
Please.
This conversation is great. And Amanda Plummer, I mean, like, Roth is fantastic. Again, like, he's this, like, easy breezy kind of dude.
Speaking like it's the 1970s, by the way.
Yes. Again, more racial slurs up and down about Asian people and Jewish people and, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, so, it's a real, like, well-rounded offenders
I'm an
gallery.
Equal opportunity offender.
He doesn't even give it to the Jews that bad. The Asian people get it fucking hard.
Yes, it's a hard G word there. And that's the thing, too, is, like, does it need to be here? Like, it makes sense when Christopher Walken says it later in the movie as a guy that came back from Hanoi or whatever.
Right.
You still don't need it, but I'm like, that's that character.
But, you know, at the same,
here, I'm like, okay, what...
I think you need it. I think one of the reasons maybe why they did it and why maybe there was a lot of heat around this is like all the slurs and stuff, movies don't do that.
Yes.
So it's attention grabbing.
Yes.
It makes you stop and listen.
But was there even, I don't remember, and I certainly don't remember my parents, and they would talk about movies and what was like going on in movie culture readily enough, but like, I don't even remember there being a big deal about the fact that those words were being at the time.
I don't remember that
at
either.
At the time, it did not matter.
I was looking up. Spike Lee kind of went off the top rope on Tarantino around Jackie Brown, and then retroactively was like, "That dude uses that word insanely in all of his movies." Yada yada yada. And that's true. Yeah, and but that's like whatever that is, 97, 98. Yeah, I think at the time it was like, But also,
smarting from the Sundance stuff, I think. Just a little bit.
It's him doing the 70s stuff, right? That's how movies mm-hmm. in the 70s sounded.
Yes.
You would hear, you know, you're watching like Robert Mitchum and you're like, Jesus Christ,
I don't
Robert
think
Mitchum.
There's a movie with Robert Mitchum saying the N-word.
No, that's fair.
Maybe Thunder Road? No.
No. No, but I mean, you're totally right, though, because that's all this dude has ever been, which is fine, but he's just the dude remaking movies that he watched.
Yeah.
At the junk houses, the sleaze houses, in the Los Angeles area
but
back
like
in the
Black
1970s.
Belt Jones, I don't think even had it this many times, man.
But no, it is. I'm not saying it's not overkill. I'm just saying
that's where it's coming
from.
Of course.
This is how he chooses to translate these movies. And honestly, QT, if you're remembering these movies this way, I don't know.
That's what sticks out. But I love the moment of, you know, they're just having this couple having a conversation. Oh, they're bank robbers. Hey, well, let's rob a coffee shop. And again, like Amanda Plummer is at like four. I mean, like he is such a good director of actors. And every actor in this movie wants to be in this movie so like game for this insane dialogue. It's an iconic moment when she picks up her gun. Any of you fucking pricks move, I'll execute every last motherfucking one of you.
And did you guys notice that once we switch to the Jules and Vincent perspective, she says a different line?
Yes.
It's like the Rashomon effect here.
Totally.
Well, he gets to own this scene. She gets to own the later scene when they come back to it. She is all over the place in that scene.
Absolutely. I do love the very funny Garcon coffee. Garcon means boy. This waitress is like, you're a fucking idiot.
Did I read that right? It's Linda Lovelace who's playing that?
Linda Lovelace plays the waitress? Is that right?
I saw that in the thing. I was like, what the fuck? Really?
But yes, the freeze frame right into the Dick Dale twangy surf guitar, which I've just been listening to surf music like all week.
Sure, why not?
It's been fucking great.
I know Miserable is the big one, but Bullwinkle Part 2 is maybe one of my favorite songs. Period. When he's doing the heroin drive.
Oh, yes. That's a really
the Centurion song. Yeah.
The vibe in that whole thing is really great. But yeah, this whole opening
the
credit
title
scene,
card,
just the rolling credits, that fucking yellow, just that cigarette smoke stained yellow, just so perfectly. The yellowed pages of the novels. Really fucking great
and
graphic design.
Because we're growing out of Reservoir Dogs, which is a little bit of that in this movie. We're changing the radio station to get to the next song.
Yes, changes it over to Jungle Boogie.
We don't have Stephen Wright. Is what you're saying.
Hey, Quentin, are you going to need me again in the next movie?
Yeah, he could be working at the same station or something, man.
KBBL Sounds of the 70s.
That's, you know what's funny is I think that the changing the radio station is also something he took from Demme, because that's how Melvin and Howard opens.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
oh,
that's funny. That's the first thing I thought of.
His radio play is interesting. I was trying to think about this because it's Reservoir Dogs. It's this Once Upon a Time has great radio stuff all over it. Is that, I can't remember as much radio stuff in Jackie Brown because in Jackie Brown, we're like buying CDs. Yeah,
it's a lot of cassette tapes.
The Delphonic
tapes. Yeah. So this might be his only three
radio movies.
Radio stuff.
This and Jackie Brown are the two that really feel special to me after looking at his whole.
Jackie Brown is so good.
I pretty much love all of his movies, but like those two specifically feel like you were getting that freshness still to this day that you felt the first time you watched them. Like they don't age at all, despite the language stuff.
It's interesting. Yeah, I remember being disappointed by Jackie Brown as a kid, and then watching.
It's a movie that would disappoint children.
Yeah, exactly. Because I was like, oh man, it's gonna be cool, you know. But it's like it's a movie for adults. You know what I mean? Like the relationship is so adult. It's great, and it's
paced more like a movie for adults.
They don't even say beep or beep or beep. What the fuck?
Exactly. And but I actually like his latter output. I really think. Inglourious is a great movie. I think
that's the one I'm not as
into. Yeah,
Hateful Eight. I go to bat for. I love. That
I love
movie.
Hateful Eight, and I look. And Once Upon a Time, I think might be his best.
Well,
movie.
I think Once Upon a Time, is probably his masterpiece.
I feel like it's just the culmination of everything over 30 years of movie making.
Because that's what I was curious about. Because I feel like Alien test of like you need to show an alien what. A Quentin Tarantino movie is it Pulp Fiction or is it Once Upon a Time?
It's Pulp Fiction.
It's Pulp Fiction.
I think it's absolutely Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's two, like, I love Once Upon a Time in Hollywood as well, but like There is a specialness to this in Jackie Brown that I, as much as I love his other movies and they have their own special elements, it doesn't feel like this. When I rewatch them, it's not so specific. And part of that, of course, is nostalgia. But like, I even in the pacing, like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is a behemoth.
Yes.
Like, I barely felt the fucking runtime.
And
the
pacing
out.
Might be a little bit better here. This one really does feel like it shoots off the fucking screen at you. More than any of his other movies.
I think you're totally right.
But again, this beginning is like, you watch this, you're like, I'm going to watch this whole fucking movie right now.
Yeah, no.
Even like, talking about it, I'm like, I want to watch this whole fucking movie right now.
Well, it was funny because Chelsea was like, oh, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, one of the things we're recording is a We Love Movies on Pulp Fiction. And she was like, did you watch it yet?
Yeah.
And she's like, I've only seen it the one time. And it was like, oh man, I'll watch it again right now if you want to, honestly.
I've done it.
If you liked what you just heard and you want to get the rest of this episode, head on over to patreon.com/wehatemovies, where not only can you instantly unlock the rest of this fine program, you also get yourself access to hours upon hours of exclusive shows and commentaries you cannot get anywhere else. That's patreon.com/wehatemovies.